welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear a seafarer mystery on Danger with Granger. But right now, it's the adventures of Leonidas Witherall. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode from September 24th, 1944, with Walter Hampton as star.
All right, mister, your page a quarter. There's the rifle. Take your shot.
Stop! Put down that gun.
What's wrong, lady?
Well, look, behind the target he's shooting at. Running down the side of the wall. See it? That's blood.
Well, there's a dead body behind that target. Police! Murder!
W.O.R. Mutual presents the distinguished American actor Walter Hampton in The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall.
Murder.
You wouldn't think so. He looks just like Shakespeare.
It's his beard, and he's the head of an important school for boys in New England.
He also writes the thriller stories on the side, the Lieutenant Hazeltine story.
But Leonidas is engaged in much more vital business now, isn't he, Mr. Hampton?
Yes. Business that takes precedence over all of Leonidas's regular activities. The neighborhood housekeeper in Dalton, Witherall's close friend, Mrs. Mullett, has entered a contest to determine who makes the finest preserves in the state. The contest is a feature of the annual state fair. And Witherall has borrowed a horse and buggy in which he's now heading for the fair. Get up there, girl. Mrs. Mullett, you should have no difficulty at all in winning this contest. Something of an epicure, I can say your preserves are perfect.
Well, I'm going to have mighty hard competition, though, Mr. Witherall. That Mrs. Axelbent's not easy to please.
Mrs. Axelbent?
Mm-hmm. She's going to be the judge. Going to taste all the entries.
Hmm.
Very uppity she is. Might not like my preserves at all.
Prefers axle grease, perhaps.
Well, don't you know Mrs. Axelbent?
Yes, I met her once. Her face is familiar, but her name is impossible.
She's a divorcee, you know.
Oh?
She was married to that farmer in Berry County, Mr. Axelbent. Now she's going to marry the wealthiest farmer in the county, a Mr. Fribbett.
Axelbent, Fribbett. For a moment, I thought she was making a change for a better name. Wrong again. Oh, come on there, gal. Get up. Go on.
She divorced him about 2 years ago. They say he never got over it either. Still very jealous. And he used to be very pleasant. Now he's gloomy all the time.
Rufus, I haven't time to talk to you now. Come and see me some other day.
You're always too busy to talk to me.
Oh, don't be tiresome, dear. Now, I really must go. I'm due at the state fair. I'm to be a judge.
I'm going to prepare myself, entering a prize bull. Before you get out of here, I have something to say. I won't let you.
Rufus, we've been legally divorced. And it's so painful to go over all of our differences again. I've told you before, you're the most insanely jealous man on earth. That's why I divorced you. That's why you're behaving now like a hopeless fool.
You made me jealous, playing up to every fellow we met.
Oh, you imagined all that. Why upset yourself?
You don't love Fribbett any more than you love me. He's the wealthiest farmer in the state. That's what you're after.
Now, that's very unfair. You've no idea of how I feel about him.
I know how you feel about everything. It either pays off for you or it doesn't. Now, get this. If I can't have you, no other man will. Remember what the minister said? Whom God hath joined together...
You're being very final about something that's none of your business.
Before you marry that man, I'd rather see you dead first. I will see you dead first.
Mrs. Axelbent never did strike me as a very pleasant person, Mrs. Mullett. Possibly because she was always so deliberately pleasant. She has such an even disposition, irritating all the time.
Oh, you turn to the left here.
Where you going there, you old plug? Get up there now. Go on.
Well, this Mr. Fribbett, the man she's going to marry, he has the best-looking son. Randy's his name. They say Randy's not very happy about that woman marrying his father. He's always been kind of a hot-tempered lad anyway. Doesn't relish having her as a stepmother.
You want me out of the way, don't you, Mrs. Axelbent?
Why, no, Randy. Why do you say that?
Because I always tell the truth. You're not marrying my father because you love him. You want to own this farm.
And you've always expected to inherit the farm yourself. Is that it?
I've worked on this farm since I was old enough to stand up. That gives me a good claim, doesn't it?
Randy, why don't you take, what's that girl's name?
Connie? Connie Maplegrove?
Yes. Why don't you marry Connie and get away from the farm? Earn a living in your own way, under your own steam. Why do you feel content to just sit back and wait till your father dies?
Go away, huh? I'm wise to this dirty game you're playing, but I've one sure way to cut it short.
What in the world are you talking about?
You keep trying to marry my father and take the farm away from me. You'll see what I'm talking about. The ceremony will have to be postponed because nobody can marry a dead bride.
There's the fair right up ahead of us, Mr. Witherall.
Well, so it is. I'll just tie her up here. You know, only see hitching posts at the fair these days.
There's Mrs. Axelbent, standing by that first booth. See her? Decorated like an admiral's flagship, ain't she?
Yes, decorated when the admiral wasn't looking. Hold still now there, girl. That's it.
Yes, hello there, Mrs. Axelbent.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Mullet. Oh, I know you.
Hmm?
That beard. Now, just a minute, just a minute. Oh, of course. The man who looks like Shakespeare. You're Leonidas Witherall.
Yes, Mrs. Axelbent. And how are you? How's every little thing?
Are you going to judge this preserves contest, Mrs. Axelbent?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Wacker.
Well, Mrs. Wacker, you know Mr. Witherall, don't you? Mrs. Wacker does most of the folks' laundry back in Dalton.
Well, how do you do, Mrs.
Answer my question. Are you going to judge the preserves contest, Mrs. Axelbent?
Yes, I'm to be the judge.
Well, I'm taking back my jar if you're to be the judge.
My dear woman, I hardly think a scene at this time.
I don't care who hears me. I'll take my jar back, thank you. I couldn't win if you're the judge. You're set against me.
Now, after all...
Everyone knows about you and me. They know you're trying to take my boy away from me.
Well, merely suggested to the ladies' council that I hardly think a laundry is a fit place to raise a baby.
My baby's very healthy and very happy.
Well, perhaps we could discuss this some other time, eh?
We'll talk about it now.
What's the matter? What's the matter? The women having a fight?
Oh, just ironing out a baby.
Where do they think they are?
You're making a scene, and this is in very bad taste.
You wouldn't talk to me in that house of yours. And so we'll talk now.
Come on, Mrs.
Oh, you let go of me. You leave me alone. You wouldn't dare to take away my baby. You sniveling, nosy body. You cheap hypocrite.
Your son hasn't a proper home.
For what it's supposed to be, my son has the finest home in town.
But it's for the boy's own good.
You couldn't take my son away from me in a million years. You've nothing in your own life to satisfy you, and so you make up for it by meddling with everyone else's.
This promises to be the most jelly-shaking contest in history.
You meddle with my life and you'll pay for it. You take my baby from my house and I'll kill you. And God would forgive me, too.
Ah, these country fairs, so peaceful, the hope of a new world.
You know, I'm sorry for you, Mrs. Wacker. Terribly sorry. So many people in your circumstances are blind to what's best for them.
Oh, Mrs. Axelbent.
Oh, yes, Mr. Bradley.
Could you change your plans a bit? I mean about the preserves contest.
Why, what's wrong?
We'd rather have you at the war bond booth. It's much more important to sell bonds and, well, you're so popular.
Yes, isn't she?
And we thought it would be better if someone else would judge the preserves.
Oh, well, who'll judge them? Who could we get?
Why, those little jelly jars are causing one crisis after another, aren't they? Before being eaten, too.
Let's see. Somebody around here could do it.
Well, Mr. Witherall could do it.
Now, hold on, Mrs. Mullet, please.
Oh, would you, Mr. Witherall? Oh, I'd appreciate it so much.
Well, as a gastronomist, I'm afraid I'm caviar to the general.
What's that?
Shakespeare. I thought you said you recognized me.
Oh, go on, Mr. Witherall.
I'd like him to do it. He looks like a very honest man.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Wacker. To be honest, as this world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000.
Hey, what's wrong here?
Oh, just a discussion, Rufus. We need someone to take my place judging the preserves. Oh, do you all know Mr. Axelbent?
Oh, well, no,
hurry up and settle it. I just took Dalton Chancery, Prince Igor the Fourth, over to his pen.
Dalton Chancery, Prince Igor the Fourth, pen name of a writer?
It's my prize bull. Oh. The trouble getting him here, too, is very wild today. See him in the booth with the flag on it?
Yes. He looks formidable, as the English say, doesn't he?
Well, get going here, folks. I've no time to waste.
All right. I'll do my best as a jelly taster.
Well,
hey, what's up?
Why don't you get things started?
Well, I'm not going to judge the preserves, Randy. Mr. Witherall is. Do you know everyone? Randy Pribbett.
Oh, come on. Come on, get going, folks.
Everybody over to booth number 3 for the preserve contest.
Booth number 3.
Hey, you see my bull, Randy? I bet you we come out on top this year.
You think so?
Yeah.
Here's my jar, Mr. Witherall.
And mine.
There's about 2 dozen others already in the booth.
I'll steer the crowd over. You get up on the platform, Mr. Witherall.
See you later, Shakespeare. And thank you for taking my place.
See you later.
By the way, here's our entry, Mr. Witherall. We should walk away with a contest. My fiance made these. Connie Maplegrove.
Oh, all right, Randy. Let me first hop up on this platform. There we are.
Quiet, everybody. Quiet, everybody. Quiet, please. Thank you. Here's a clean spoon, Mr. Witherall. You can start any time now.
Start clean, eh? All right, Mr. Bradley. Here goes.
What's wrong back there?
The back of his wild horse! He broke out of his pen! He's heading this way!
Come on down off that platform, Mr. Witherall. Why, the bull's liable to pick you out.
Me? Pick me out? Oh, you flatter me.
Well, there he comes! Get out of the way, everybody!
Stand back, everybody! Don't push! Don't get near him, anybody! He's my bull! He's my bull! I know him! He'll gore you to death! Dalton! Dalton, boy! Go back to your pen! Go back!
Why, that bull's running around like he's crazy.
Darn crowd! Pushing so much, I can hardly stand up.
Look out, Randy. You'll knock over that jar of preserves.
Oh, gosh.
Your coat. Sorry, I couldn't help it, Mr. Witherall. Now you've got that jelly all over your coat.
Well, of all things to happen, filling preserves all over his coat.
Yeah, don't move, everybody. Hey, if you start to run, that bull of mine will kill you.
Come down off that platform, Mr. Witherall. The bull's looking at you.
At me?
Well, yes. Don't move now. Don't budge an inch.
That bull's too close for comfort.
Don't run, Witherall. He'll go after you.
Get out of my way, everybody.
Everybody get a gun. Let's shoot him. Hey, don't you dare shoot my bull.
But he'll ride those horns right into Mr. Witherall. Oh, don't run. Oh, good heavens. Somebody save him. Save Mr. Witherall. Or the bull's almost caught him. Faster, Mr. Witherall. Faster.
Help. Help! He's got him near that wall. Don't back up against that wall. He'll get you into a trap.
Oh, I can't look. It'll be horrible. Look, Mr. Witherall's up against that wall. While the bull's going to charge, he's getting set. Do something. Do something.
Take off your coat, Witherall. Throw your coat at him. It might stop him.
Might make him angrier, too.
You've got to take that chance. Take off your coat and throw it at him.
All right. Try anything. Here goes.
Why, it's working. The bull's looking at his coat.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. I thought it'd distract him.
The bull's goring his coat.
Well, that's a lot better than goring Mr. Witherall.
All right, Randy. You, Joe, a couple of you men. Sneak up on him. Grab him. We can pull him back to the pen. He'll be quiet now. Yeah, he's taking quite a fancy to Witherall's coat.
Yes, lucky it was covered with jelly.
Come on now, slow. Easy, sneak up. Be careful. Okay, I got him. Now, hold on.
Thank
we
you.
Got him. Right.
Easy,
easy,
Dalton, boy. Calm down,
huh? What'd you want to break out of the pen and scare all these people for, huh? Come on, calm down, boy.
Well, isn't anybody going to ask about me?
You all right, Mr. Witherall?
I'll be all right as soon as I get my heart out of my mouth.
Well, that was just about the most terrible thing I've ever seen happen to you, Mr. Witherall. It was your own fault, though. You shouldn't have started to run.
Yes, I knew it was my fault. In fact, while I was making my 100-yard dash from the platform with the bull's horns flirting with my coattails all the way, I kept thinking of that famous phrase, is this trip necessary?
All right, folks, all right. Come on, break it up. No need to crowd around. Lots of other booths are open here.
Why, look at that bull chewing on your coat. Oh, it's a shame you have to lose it.
Well, let the poor little thing keep it. I'm warm enough now to get along without it. And anyway, those preserves...
He seems to like those preserves a lot. Look at the way he's licking them off the coat.
Quite a judge, isn't he? Well, he's usurped my place. Why not give him the spoon, too?
What's the matter, Dalton boy? You tired from chasing Mr. Witherall? Yes, poor Dalton boy.
Yes, hope I didn't frighten him.
Say, you know... This bull of mine looks sick to me.
He looks sick? My good man, what do you think I've been doing?
Well, chasing after you. It wore him out.
Wore him out? Now, that's odd. Very peculiar.
Running a couple of yards after Mr. Witherall wore out your prize bull.
Well, now listen to him. Look at him wobbling on his feet.
Oh, too bad I wasn't wearing slippers, too.
Want to lie down, Dalton boy? Feeling bad, huh? Lie down if you want to. Go on, lie down.
Yes, he's been under quite a strain. Perhaps we could get a chaise longue for him.
Never mind being so funny. My bull's sick, and you made him that way.
Well, he made me sick, tit for tat.
Well, the bull does seem pretty badly off, doesn't he?
You keep out of this, Mrs. Wacker. The very idea. The bull nearly kills Mr. Witherall. Now everybody's feeling sorry for the bull.
Uh-huh.
Come on, Mr. Witherall. Let's get out of here.
Yes, a little relaxation is in order, Mrs. Mullet. They probably won't reorganize your jelly contest for a while.
Well, want to stroll around the rest of the fair?
Yes, a very good suggestion.
If this bull of mine's really sick on account of you, Witherall, I'll sue you.
Yes, serves me right, teasing wild bulls. Bye. Come along, Mrs. Mullet.
Doesn't it strike you as very funny that a big husky prize bull would get sick just from running around a bit?
Funny is not the word, Mrs. Mullet.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I'm walking over here toward the bull's pen purposely. He did not break out by himself.
What?
I'm wondering who let him out. Mrs. Mullet, that word is murderous, perhaps. Oh, look, Mrs. Mullet, there's a shooting gallery.
Well, you're not such a good shot, are you?
Oh, I'm not, eh? I was captain of the Meredith rifle team. Dead-Eye Witherall, they called me. I'm for that shooting gallery. Come on.
All right.
No free shots. Here you are, folks. 10 shots for a quarter. They're all trying it. Every man his own commando. Okay, step right up and test your skill.
I'll try it. Here's a quarter.
Yes, sir. Yes, all right. Here we are. Going to win a Cupid doll for your girlfriend.
What did you say?
Oh, never mind him, Mrs. Mullet. He means to be complimentary. Say, fella, what's the most difficult object to hit?
Well, now, that clay pipe way over on the left side there, you see it? You hit that thing and you get a free round. Yeah, plus a gorgeous, rosy-cheeked, blue-eyed, practically genuine Cupid doll.
Well, you get the doll ready. Dead-Eye Witherall is about to perform. Now, here we go.
Well, I'm glad you're shooting blanks.
Oh, lady, you couldn't knock anything over with blanks. Those are real bullets. Go on, mister, go on.
Right.
Did you say dead eye, mister?
I'm merely warming up.
Still warming up.
Mr. Witherall, stop shooting. Put down that gun.
What's the matter?
Why, what's happened?
Well, look on the curtain behind the target. It's trickling down the curtain. It's blood.
Well, she's right. Someone's behind that curtain. Someone's been shot back there.
Come on, let's see. Hurry.
It must be between the curtain and the steel wall. I got a reinforced steel wall behind the target curtain. Holy smokes.
It's Mrs. Axelband.
Why, she's dead.
Yes, standing up.
Yeah, look at all that blood. Must be about 15 bullets in her. Blanks, indeed.
Gagged and tied to this pole back of the curtain. No one could see her, but nearly everyone who took a shot was likely to hit her.
Oh, good gracious. I've never in my life seen anything as awful as that. Oh, that pool of blood.
Say, you were the last guy to shoot, mister. I think the cops will want to talk to you, you murderer.
Me?
Oh, I just can't stand looking at it. Take me away. Take me away.
Take her away. Help. Police. Murder. Murder.
Take it easy, little man, or you'll wake the dead.
Shooting to the extreme left of the target curtain, huh, Bill?
That's right, Sergeant McCobble. None of the bullets from my rifle could have hit Mrs. Axelman.
Yeah, murderer sure was a brute. Taking that woman and tying her to the pole there behind that curtain. You know, Bill, she must have tried screaming, but I guess the handkerchief was so tight that she couldn't make much noise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, who was shooting here just before Shakespeare? Would you recognize him?
Oh, I know some of them. There was a lady, the one that owns the laundry, you know, over in Dalton.
Yeah.
Well, that's Mrs. Wacker.
Mrs. Wacker and a young fella, the Fribbett boy, Randy.
Uh-huh.
Randy Fribbett.
Go on, who else?
Well, the farmer, you know, the farmer, the bull got loose. What's his name? Axelrod, Axel Grease.
Axel Band.
Axel Band. A couple of others, too. There's a soldier and some sailors.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of...
Say, it makes things kind of tough, doesn't it, Bill?
It is hard to pin on anyone, Sergeant.
Is that so? Well, how about him, Sergeant? Do you know this fella?
Shakespeare?
No. This fella right here.
Why, sure. I've known Mr. Witherall for years. Don't be silly.
Well, why couldn't it have been him, if you ask me? He's a fancy-looking guy. Got a beard. He might be a spy or something.
I'm a spy. Bearded men are either spies or philosophers. I'd rather be a spy.
Here you, Mr. Witherall. I've been looking all over for you.
Oh, Mr. Axelvent, I'm afraid we've some very bad news.
Oh, never mind that. Something important's happened. My bull's dead.
Your bull died?
Yes. Dalton Chancery, Prince Igor IV, my prized bull, died a while after you left, after he chased you. It was your fault, Witherall.
He died, eh? Sergeant McCobble, that's the answer.
What are you thinking of, Bill?
That bull was poisoned.
Poisoned?
Of course. Don't you remember His Royal Highness ate something just before he became ill?
He ate your coat?
No, he licked the preserves off my coat, Mrs. Mullet. And the preserves were poisoned, you see.
Poisoned preserves? What's this all about? What's the police here for?
Mr. Axelvent, we found your ex-wife in back of this shooting gallery. I should say we found your ex-wife's body. She's been murdered.
Merrick?
Bill? Oh. Whoever tied Mrs. Axelbent up behind this gallery, he tried to kill her first by poisoning the jelly.
Uh-huh.
You see, because they knew she was going to be the judge of the contest and they'd be tasting each bottle. Isn't that it?
Exactly. Therefore, Sergeant, your problem now is who made the preserves that were spilled on my coat?
Here's the girl who made that jar of poisoned preserves, Bill. Connie Maplegrove.
Oh, Connie.
Yeah, I got her name by checking the number of the broken bottle against the entry list.
Why, she's Randy's sweetheart.
Well, what about it? I don't know anything about this. I did make the preserves, but I never dreamed of killing Mrs. Axelbent.
Connie, darling.
Oh,
just
Randy,
heard.
It's awful. They think I killed
know,
Mrs.
Dear, and I know you're perfectly innocent. You've got no right to keep her here, Sergeant.
Mind your own business, Randy. I'm running this. They tell me, Connie, that if Mrs. Axelbent married Randy's father, your boyfriend would never inherit that big farm his father had.
That's right. But Connie had nothing to do with it.
I'm asking Connie the questions, not you.
Well, it's true, but she didn't have any right to get the farm. Randy deserves it. He worked on it all his life.
With that woman out of the way, why, you marry Randy, he gets that tremendous farm, and you're sitting pretty. Is that correct?
Well, I never thought of such a thing. Besides this, well, there's something else you didn't think of.
What's on your mind, Connie?
Well, it's very simple.
Yes, I know, but what's on it?
Why do you accuse me? Anyone could have poisoned the preserve somehow. It might have been that laundress, Mrs. Wacker. It might have been Mr. Axelbent. He's very jealous.
Strangely enough, Connie, we've already realized there are quite a number of prospects and suspects, too. But you're here for a specific reason.
Besides, the jar of preserves was sealed with paraffin, wasn't it? How could anyone else get poison into that bottle? You're the only person in the world who could have done it, Connie. And you're going to sit there until you tell us the truth.
Yes, we've got the goods on you, all right.
Please, Mrs. Mullet, leave this to me. Now, go on, Connie. Go on. Start talking. Well, go on.
I tell you, I don't know anything about this.
Okay, then we'll just sit here till you change your mind and quit lying.
Yes, we're waiting for you to tell the truth.
Please, Mrs. Mullet, leave this to me. Go on, Connie. Now, it'll be easier for you if you don't stall. You killed Mrs. Axelbent, didn't you? You murdered her, didn't you? You tied her up behind that shooting gallery, and then you went out front, and you paid a quarter for enough bullets to commit cold-blooded murder. Now you're going to hang for
it. No, I didn't do it. I didn't.
Come on, now. It'll be easier for you if you don't stall.
Please, Mrs. Mullet, leave this to me.
I don't know anything about this. I never wanted to come to the fair. I was afraid something would happen. I didn't want to enter the contest. I really didn't want to come here at all. That's why I sent Randy ahead with my jar. I wanted to stay home.
Just a minute. Didn't you come here with Randy?
No, I came much later. I've only been here about 10 minutes. Like I said, I didn't want to come at all.
You weren't here when the contest started, when the bull broke loose?
What bull?
Ah. Sergeant, our problem is not who made the preserves. The murderer is the person who let that prize bull out of his pen.
Let the prize bull out?
Certainly. The killer planned to dispose of Mrs. Axelbent by means of the preserves. Originally, that's obvious. But at the last minute, there was an unexpected change of judges. I took over the role. The killer wasn't after me, thank heaven. So she, or he, had to get rid of that bottle of poison jelly before I tasted it.
So whoever it was let the bull out of the pen as an excuse to start a panic, so as the bottle could be broken.
That's it. The murderer is the person who deliberately broke that bottle of preserves and spilled it on me.
Why, that was...
Grab him, Sergeant.
No. All right, you stay right where you are.
Randy,
just stay here.
Randy, 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 no, Randy, no. You killed Mrs. Axelbent.
Fiendish way to kill, Randy, fiendish. Tie up your victim and then deliberately buy the bullets. 10 shots for a quarter. 10 bloody, fatal shots.
Oh, ow!
Either you stand still or this blackjack of mine's going to make you... Take those handcuffs, Bill. Slip them over his wrists while I hold his arms. That's it. Okay.
I swore she'd never marry my father and take that farm away from me. Well, she didn't. She didn't get it.
No, no. Neither of you will get the farm. That's even-handed justice, so my poet phrased it.
There's just one thing, Bill, about getting the poison into the jar, I mean. It was sealed with paraffin.
Oh, that's easy, Sergeant. An ordinary hypodermic syringe and needle would do the trick. Inject the poison through the paraffin without disturbing it. How about that, Randy?
Did you throw the hypodermic away, or is it still in your pocket?
Well, it's in my pocket. Left-hand pocket.
I'll get it. I'll search.
Get him!
He hit the sergeant on the head with a handcuff. There he goes. Stop him. Stop
Stay
him.
Up. My gun. Take it. Stop him.
Don't shoot. You'll kill him. Randy! Randy!
You got him, Mr. Witherall. Looks like you hit him in the leg. And with just one shot, too.
Of course, just one shot, Mrs. Mullet. Remember, Dead Eye is my middle name. Now let's find another shooting gallery, and I'll get you a rosy-cheeked, blue-eyed, practically genuine Cupid doll.
W.O.R. Mutual has presented the distinguished American actor Walter Hamden in The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall.
The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 24th, 1944, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, pairing producer-director Roger Bauer with writer Howard Merrill for the first of many broadcasts they would work together, like 1943 and 1945 in review, the program For Americans Only, which was about the dangers of atomic warfare, and the Secret Missions series on Mutual. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now another Mutual Broadcasting System episode, It's Danger with Granger. This called a Seafarer Mystery from 1956.
Danger with Granger. Come in.
You're Steve Granger.
Yes, I am.
I'm Marcia Kendall. I want you to do something for me.
Sure, sure, but you'd better sit down, Mrs. Kendall.
Oh, I'm tired. I feel dazed. Things go around.
Here, sit right here.
Thank you.
Well, then, what's this all about?
It's about the letters. I have your confidence, do I not?
Of course you do.
I minded the letters, but they weren't quite as bad as the telephone calls. At 6 in the morning.
You've been receiving threatening calls and letters, is that it? What do they say?
Always the same things. The letters, the voice on the telephone. I recognize his voice, his handwriting.
Now, you know this man? He's blackmailing you.
Certainly I know him. He's my husband.
You mean your own husband is sending you threatening notes?
Yes, he is.
Well, that certainly should be easy to stop.
I don't think so, Mr. Granger.
Why not?
Because my husband died 3 months ago.
This is Granger. It came as quite a shock when the woman who was my client announced she was getting notes and telephone calls from a dead husband. But it seemed like it was more of a shock to her than to me, because as soon as she'd got that much out, she keeled over in a dead faint. And just to make matters worse, that was the moment my newspaper pal, Cal Hendricks, picked to pay a call.
Well, 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 what's this? The Steve Granger method for captivating beautiful women?
Oh, what you do, Stevie boy? Knock them cold to make sure they fall for you?
Now, look, go peddle your wisecracks to television. She fainted.
Yeah, one good look at your homely puss, no doubt.
You'd faint, too, if your dead husband had been writing you letters and calling you on the phone.
Her dead husband? Well, that's a little twist.
Oh. She's coming out of it.
What happened?
You just fainted. Here, let me help you up.
Oh, you...
Well, this is a friend of mine, Cal Hendricks, Mrs. Marsha Kendall.
How do you do, Mrs. Kendall?
Then maybe you better go home and have a rest. Would you like me to call you doctor?
No. No, I must settle this thing. Now, Mr. Granger, do you remember a man named Clark Kendall?
The name sounds vaguely familiar.
Sure, Stevie, I remember the story. He was drowned.
Yes, Mr. Hendricks. And I'm his widow.
Of course. He fell overboard off his boat. You tried to help him. The police had you in custody for several days.
That is correct, Mr. Granger.
They finally agreed that it was an accident and let you go. And now your dead husband is writing you and telephoning you. What's this all about?
I married Clark 2 years ago. We were very happy in spite of certain obstacles.
What do you mean by obstacles?
Well, some of Clark's relatives didn't like me at all. Clark and I loved boating. We spent most of our time aboard the Seafarer. Our 50-foot sailboat.
Just how did your husband die, Mrs. Kendall?
It was about 3 months ago. We were below in the cabin. The storm was coming up, and the Seafarer was straining at him wind.
Darling, there's quite a blow coming up. I think I'll go topside and check the line.
Oh, but Clark, you've been on deck twice. Surely you must have taken care of everything.
Well, I just want to make sure, that's all.
You act like you're afraid of a little wind, darling.
Well, I am. I am. Uh-oh. I wonder what that was. Something bumped the hull.
I do hope another boat hasn't slipped its moorings. You want me to go along?
I'll call if I need you. I'll be right back.
The wind's come up. Be careful.
Don't worry.
I'd better close that hatch. It's beginning to rain. Clark again, Mr. Granger. I got in touch with the Coast Guard on the boat's radio. They came out and searched the entire area, but it was too late.
But his body was found, wasn't it?
Yes. A week later.
You identified him?
Yes.
Look, Mrs. Kendall, don't you think you'd better go home and get some rest? You're obviously unwell.
Why go home? I can't sleep. I've got to find out about those letters and telephone calls, and I need Mr. Granger's help.
Very well, Mrs. Kendall. I'd like to have a look at those letters. You have them with you?
No, they're at the apartment.
I'll pick them up later. And I'd like to have a look at your boat, if you still own it.
I do. You can pick up the keys at the yacht club office. I'll telephone.
Now, which club is it?
The Island Yacht Club.
Oh, yes, on City Island. I'll go out there today.
Here's my card. When shall I hear from you?
Probably later in the day, Mrs. Kendall. Oh,
thank you. And you, Mr. Hendricks.
I didn't do anything.
Goodbye.
Well, Steve, you got yourself quite a deal, haven't you?
Yeah. I wonder.
You wonder what?
How much Mrs. Kendall didn't tell us.
An interesting conjecture, Stevie. You know, I think I'll go out to that anchorage with you.
Cal Hendricks and I got into his car and we drove out to the City Island and the Island Yacht Club. We got the keys to the yacht Seafarer and stood for a moment waiting for a tender to take us out to the boat.
I always loved the water, Steve. Ought to buy myself a little sailboat.
Yeah, it's an interesting sight. Everybody working on the craft, painting, sanding, varnishing.
Oh, here comes the tender.
You, gentlemen, want something?
Yeah, old-timer. You take us out of the seafarer?
I reckon I can. Ain't nobody aboard, though. You got a key?
Right here.
Okay, I'll have you out there in 2 shakes of lamb steel. Hey, sit down the stern here, mister. Boat rides easy.
Right you are.
It's kind of surprising that you want to go aboard the seafarer.
Oh, why?
I talk around the yacht club beach. She might be haunted.
Cal and I looked at each other, and the balance of the ride was made in silence until we neared the slim, sleek-looking yacht. My curiosity got the better of me. Say, Pop.
Yeah?
You said there was talk about the seafarer being haunted. Where'd she get that reputation?
There's them who say Mrs. Kendall just could have pushed the skipper overboard during that storm.
And maybe hit him over the head with a boat hook while he was struggling in the water?
Could be.
I thought the Kendalls got along pretty well.
There's them who said they didn't.
Like who?
I'm not saying, mister. I'm just a man who runs the tender at this yacht club. This is a seafarer, mister. Grab a hold of that rail there. Hold us fast while your friend climbs aboard.
Okay. I got it. Go ahead, Cal.
Thanks. Now then, you hang on to this boat.
Right.
Say, how do I get you back here, Pop?
They got a kind of electric horn on the seafarer's deck. When you want to be picked up, just sound her. I'll come out and pick you up.
Thanks, Pop.
How long you intend to stay aboard?
Oh, not too long.
Well, you just sound that horn.
Nice old character, isn't he, Steve?
I'm thinking about that haunted stuff. Somebody's been shooting off their mouths around here.
Uh-huh.
Now, let's go below and look around. Pretty musty down below. Coming along, Cal?
Yes, certainly.
Wow. Nicely arranged little craft. Say, look at the navigation aid. Ship to shore radio telephone. Everything a man would want.
Steve.
What?
That bunk over there.
Somebody's been aboard this boat. Very recently, too. Cal and I got curious, and we went over the seafarer from stem to stern. The burner on the galley stove was warm, so was the coffee pot. There was pipe tobacco on the ashtray, but that was all.
Well, Steve?
Yeah, that's it. There's nobody aboard.
Unless they're clinging to the bottom of the hull.
Hey, go up on deck, Cal. Find that boat horn gadget. Give it a quick blast when we get back to shore.
All right.
Can you find it?
How's that?
Good.
What are we doing down below, Steve?
I just opened a couple of portholes for ventilation. Whoever was here last had them all closed. Down, quick! Cal, you all right? Cal! I crawled over to Cal Hendricks, looking around to try and discover the source of the mysterious shot. I saw no one. The newsman lay on his side, curled up like an unnatural kitten. There was no wound, but there was a bullet hole through the brim of his hat. Cal! Cal, come out of it!
Sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to pass out.
If somebody punctured my hat with a bullet, I'd do the same act. You okay otherwise?
Yeah.
Hey, here comes Pop. Wonder if he heard the shot.
Did you notice where it came from?
No, a sound travels in circles when you're on the water. Imagine it came from the shore, due west. Hey, look. Man running the tender boat. That isn't Pop.
So I noticed. Well, probably a relief man.
Yeah, maybe.
You fellas want to go ashore?
Yeah.
Climb aboard, then.
Right. You first, Cal.
There. I'll hang on while you get in, Steve.
Right. All right, all set, fella.
Okay. Here we go.
Say, mind if I ask you a question?
Go right ahead.
Where's the old-timer who brought us out here?
You mean Pop. He gave me this $5 to come out here and get you. He said it was worth it not to come back out here.
I asked the new boatman if he'd heard any shooting, which brought a negative shake of the head. At the dock, we asked for Pop, but no one seemed to know where he'd gone. From there, we automobiled it back to Manhattan. Cal had to finish off his story, and I headed back for my office. When I reached the door, I stopped. Through the frosted pane of glass, I could dimly make out a figure, bent over, as though it could be going through my desk. I got out my gun.
Mr. Granger! Why the gun?
I thought you were going home to rest, Mrs. Kendall.
I tried. I became terrified. I thought the phone would ring. I couldn't stand it anymore.
So you came down to my office. You make yourself at home.
After all, the door was unlocked.
Uh-huh.
What's wrong, Mr. Granger? Why are you looking like that? Have you found out something?
Yes, Mrs. Kendall. How long has it been since you've been aboard the Seafarer?
Not since the police made their investigation. Why do you ask?
Do you permit anybody aboard your boat?
Of course not. Why should I?
Carl Hendricks and I went out to the island club. We were aboard the Seafarer. We found a warm stove plus a warm coffee pot. Also, some tobacco in one of the ashtrays. You got anything to say?
No, I know nothing of this. Who would go aboard the Seafarer without permission?
How about some of your in-laws?
Oh, I don't think they'd trespass.
Who are they?
They're Clark's sister, Anne, his brother, Paul.
They live in New York?
Last I heard, Anne was in Canada. Paul's in Mexico, Veracruz.
Just loafing, is that it?
Paul runs a commercial fishing fleet. It's called the Kendall Company.
Mrs. Kendall, why don't you go back home?
I can't, Mr. Granger. I'm frightened. I keep hearing Clark's voice on the telephone.
You gotta get some rest. I'll telephone a hotel nearby and get you a room.
But, Mr. Granger...
By the way, Mrs. Kendall, there's an old boatman down at the Island Yacht Club. They call him Pop.
What about him?
What reason would he have for saying that the Seafarer was haunted? What do you know about that?
Nothing, Mr. Granger. Absolutely nothing.
I conducted Marcia Kendall to a nearby hotel and fixed her a room. If the letters and telephone calls from a dead husband were bothering her so much, I figured she ought to be safe from them for a while. But the look in her eyes at the reference to Pop, who'd taken Cal and me out to the Kendall's yacht, sent me in search of the old boatman. I was told he might be found in a bistro called the Crossed Anchors. This was quite a hangout that evidently was not frequented by the upper classes. It had an odor which reminded me of bilge water, which wasn't bad when you got used to it. The old-timer was seated at a back table. There was another man with him. A sailor, complete with dungarees and a beard. When he left, I moved over. Hiya, Pop.
Where do you want?
You took me out of the Seafarer a couple of hours back. I might want you to do it again. Now.
Get my relief man.
Your relief man doesn't know anything about a shot that was fired at us. Would you?
I got nothing more to say about the Seafarer, and I don't know nothing about no shooting.
Even over a drink?
Even over the whole Atlantic Ocean.
Clark Kendall was drowned off the Seafarer, old-timer. I'd like to ask some questions.
There are those who say that Mrs. Kendall can answer a lot of questions, if she wants to. Ask her.
Ask her what?
Did she hit Kendall over the head with a boat hook instead of fishing him out of the water?
You said they didn't get along.
There are those who say she married him for his money.
Who is those who say, Pop? I could mention your remarks to the police. Then what?
You're a policeman?
Nope.
I thought not. Hey, Charlie, come here a minute.
So, you are having a drink on me.
Yeah. I'm having one on you right now.
What's yours, Pop?
This fella here. He's been sort of threatening me. He says he might tell the police I was talking about the Seafarer.
Get up, mister.
Why?
Never mind why. Get up and get out.
Okay.
I'll go along with you and make sure.
You don't have to guide me, bartender. I can find my way to the door.
Yeah, I know you can. Only don't find your way back in here again.
I might have argued with that bartender, but he was out of my weight class. He'd have tipped the scales at about 210. I went back to my office and put in a long-distance call. As I waited for the connection, I made a quick call to Cal Hendricks.
Hendricks speaking.
Cal, this is Granger.
Oh, yeah, Stevie.
What's new with the haunted lady and the haunted boat?
I want you to do me a favor, Cal. Clark Kendall was buried in Lawntier Cemetery. Check for me. See if he was actually interred, will you?
Why, you think he was never buried?
Just check. I'll take it from there. And when you've done it, come around here and pick me up. I hung up and waited for a reply to my long-distance effort. When it came through, I knew a lot more, but still not enough. I sat thinking till Cal Hendricks showed up, and then we beat it around the corner to the hotel where Marcia Kendall was registered.
Took me a little longer than I figured, Steve.
What'd you find out, Cal?
The facts. Coroner's jury listed Clark Kendall's death as accidental. Marcia Kendall was exonerated of any suspicion.
Yeah, I know that.
He was in Lawntier Cemetery.
Was he definitely identified as Clark Kendall? When a corpse spends a little time in the water, they change appearance.
His dentist identified him definitely. He'd had some special bridge work done.
Well, that really fixes me.
Ah, now don't tell me you believe that Clark Kendall is still alive.
Right now, I'm believing nothing. Here's a room. 504. I only hope she hasn't taken a powder.
Mr. Granger, I've been so frightened. Come in, please.
Thanks, Mrs. Kendall. I don't know what you're scared of. Nobody knows you're staying at this hotel outside of Mr. Hendricks and me. Unless you told someone else.
Why should I tell anyone else?
I'm going to be very blunt with you, lady. Is it or is it not true that you could have pushed your husband overboard that night? And when he tried to climb back aboard the seafarer, you hit him over the head with a boat hook.
How can you say such things? Why would I employ you to find out who's been making these telephone calls and writing these letters?
That's why I'm here, Mrs. Kendall. I want to look at those letters you mentioned.
Very well. I have them right here.
Take it easy, Granger. She's in no condition to stand too much of this type of
questioning. I'm in no condition to stand this kind of malarkey.
Here, Mr. Granger, these are the letters I received. And any number of people will identify them as Clark's handwriting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can prove he actually wrote these?
I can.
Mrs. Kendall, it's impossible for a man buried in a cemetery to write letters.
That's what is so fantastic, Mr. Granger. That's why I came to you. Oh, you've got to believe me. I did not kill my husband.
Another thing, Mrs. Kendall, you said these letters were at your apartment.
I picked them up when I went home, before I registered at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Granger, you're thinking horrible things.
Go easy, Steve. Shall I answer it, Mrs. Kendall?
I think she'd better do that, Cal.
Hello?
Marcia?
It's my husband.
Hold the receiver away from here so I can listen.
I want you to meet me tonight. Aboard the Seafarer at 10 o'clock. And if you're not there, I'll come after you.
That was your husband?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. Mr. Granger, what shall I do?
Be aboard the Seafarer at 10 o'clock, like he told you, because Cal Hendricks and I will be there, too. And we'll prove whether your husband is really dead or not. Cal Hendricks stayed with Marcia Kendall to make sure that she would be aboard the yacht Seafarer at 10 that night. A few hours in my hands, I ran an errand. One which took me back out to the Island Yacht Club and the old gent we knew as Pop.
You back again? What do you want now?
From you, I want nothing but the truth.
I ain't talking to you.
But you are, old-timer, and right now. This was 10 o'clock. Marcia Kendall had come aboard the Seafarer by herself. Cal Hendricks and I had rowed out from an inconspicuous spot. We were huddled in the forward cabin waiting for a dead husband to come alive.
Granger, did you hear that?
Yeah, small boat just tied up alongside.
Think that's our man?
Yeah, must be.
Well, my dear, and how are you?
Paul. Not Clark, but Paul.
That's right, I'm Paul.
But you're supposed to be down in Mexico, fishing off the coast. It was you, who sent those letters and made those calls. You copied Clark's handwriting. You imitated his voice.
That is correct, my dear. I also trailed you to the hotel where you were hiding.
But why? What have I ever done to you? What do you want?
I wanted you on board this boat. We're going to sail out of this harbor together.
Paul, you're insane.
I don't think so.
You were around the night Clark was drowned. You must have been hiding on deck. You pushed him over the side.
Did I?
And it was you I saw huddled in the small boat that night. I had dismissed it as imagination.
Very shrewd, dear sister-in-law.
Why did you do it?
I hated him. And you.
I'm going to notify the police.
On the ship to shore radio? It's disabled, darling.
Let go of me!
Oh, no.
First, I was going to take you with me. I still am, but I don't think you'll complete the entire trip.
Oh, you're hurting.
I'm going in there and get that character.
Okay.
Help! Help!
You're wasting your breath, my sweet. There's no one to help.
That's where you're wrong, Kendall.
What? The detective.
Get away from her, Kendall.
And give up my shield? Oh, no, Granger. You won't shoot so long as I hold her in front of me.
Be careful, Mr. Granger. He's out of his mind.
Oh, I am, I? I'll show you. All of you.
Mr. Granger, he got a gun.
Paul Kendall started backing towards the hatch, but exposed one shoulder just enough for me to puncture it. That made it easy for Cal and me to overpower him and deliver him to police headquarters. The whole story came out a few days later.
I didn't know that Paul was up here. He was supposed to be down in Veracruz.
He had a run of bad luck. Came up here to try to get money from your husband.
How'd you find out about that, Steve?
I telephoned the offices of his company in Veracruz. They couldn't produce Paul Kendall on the phone. And I remembered the man I'd seen at the crossed anchors talking to Pop.
It was Paul?
Yeah.
What was he doing with Pop?
Now, Pop confessed that he'd been around the night of the killing. He saw your brother-in-law push your husband off the boat.
And didn't say anything?
Paul Kendall promised him a job in Mexico, if he'd help him out. It was also Pop tried to scare Cal and me, too, by firing at us when we were aboard the Seafarer. Your brother-in-law will probably go to an institution for the criminally insane.
Insane? Oh, it's...
Catch her, Cal. She's passed out again.
I've got her.
Good. Take care of her.
Hey, where are you going?
Home, old boy. This is one time where you're left holding the baby. Steve Granger again. You've just heard one of the most interesting cases in my files. I'll have another one for you. So be around next time.
Danger with Granger. On Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from 1956. Bringing to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.